And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
Welcome back into another episode of One of These Years, our Detroit Lions podcast. I'm Chris Burke, joined by Nick Baumgartner. And Nick, when's does daycare shut down for the holidays here at some point? When's
your yeah, I think actually like I got another week though. I think next week.
All right.
I think we go pretty tight to the Christmas holiday because we take them to the Jewish center, so we have other holidays that we have off, but like they do also take holidays off for Christmas, but I think we actually have some more time. So, fingers crossed. I could be wrong, though. Now that you're making me worry, Chris, the kids are probably coming home tomorrow. I'm not ready, but yeah.
I mean, I know school for us is out. Friday's the last day, and then we have 2 days of daycare next week, and then we got 2 weeks where everyone's here all the time, so... Looking forward to that. Anyway.
Yeah. It's that time of year. I told Brandon yesterday when we were on the podcast, it's that time of year every year that I feel like everyone has gotten to where they're like, I don't give a shit about anything anymore for the rest of the year. And you can call me in January. Like, that's what I feel like I'm getting from a lot of people right now. Maybe even the Lions to a degree, but we can get into that.
Sounds pretty familiar. Before we did get into that, just like a quick... more serious note, because I saw you tweet about, the tornado, all the damage that, you know, you spent some time in Bowling Green, Kentucky. You tweeted out a GoFundMe link for this one of the school, public school system down there.
Yeah.
So if you head over to Nick's Twitter account, I retweeted it too, but at Nick Baumgartner, you can find the link to the GoFundMe there. Help out.
Had a big tornado down there, and it's the link that I tweeted is... It's for Warren County Schools in Bowling Green set it up, but it goes to all families impacted. So really, really bad tornado and horrible, horrible damage down there. A lot of folks that I still know, like I said, I met my wife down there. Neither of us are from there, but we both kind of feel like it's our adopted home and still know a lot of folks down there that are going through it. So head over to my Twitter account. I tweeted that out if you want to check that out and consider sending a couple bucks. So I appreciate it.
Yeah, for sure. All right, so back on the Lions, I guess.
Yes.
I guess we should shift back. And like you said, it feels like a little bit people in general may be checking out for the year, and I don't think the Lions have done that, but circumstances have made things a little difficult here. They had 7 practice squad players up for Sunday's game. They have six active roster guys on the COVID list, and I think 2 more practice squad guys on the COVID list. So they had an outbreak there. Everyone had the flu last week. They barely made it through. There were 12 guys questionable for the game with illness. A couple of them suited up, like Jamar Jefferson didn't play at all because he was still feeling it a little bit.
Yeah, right.
And the Lions hung in there for a half and then predictably got clobbered in the second half and lost by 28. And
right.
I don't know. Who cares?
Not
anyone
a shock.
Care? Does it matter?
Yeah, right.
I guess that was like thing.
The draft stock or the draft position was preserved for another day. You move forward and you go on. You got a couple more games left to get through that. But I'm telling you, the Jags are not making it easy. And the Texans are not making it easy. They're not going away. So, like, Jets either. So, this is still high monitoring time for where is this pick going to land? And that was what I was thinking as the game was going on because... You know, early on it starts out, and you're like, okay, well, they're just not going to have enough, you know, gas to do this. And then they kind of, I think they scored really quick, and it was like, oh, well, I mean, maybe Denver's just going to, like, lazy through this. And you start thinking about the draft, and you're like, this would be a weird thing if they lose their draft. But it's that weird stretch of year, right, where it's like you can still get improvement from a lot of guys in certain specific areas, but also, like, you know, Jacobs gets hurt. You're getting guys hurt again.
Right.
Still, guys have COVID. Guys are sick. Like, this is the time of year for anyone who's rebuilding where you're like, man, I wish the season was 10 games long. You know, or it's just like this is like
now you got an extra one this year.
Right. Yeah. Right.
And the Rams looked The Rams look pretty damn good on Monday night too. So you worry about that pick shooting back up now. But yeah, I mean, that was sort of what I wanted to get into, because it was in my head, and I mentioned it to you Sunday as I was trying to figure out what to write. And then someone asked Dan Campbell during Monday's press conference, you know, like, what are you still playing for at this point? And I've had people on Twitter, especially in light of the news that Jerry Jacobs now is going to be out for nine months, saying, well, maybe they should, like, maybe you sit, Sewell's been banged up, maybe you just sit him down for the year. You put Swift on IR, like, stop trying to get him to come back. I mean, are they at a point here where they should be considering some of that stuff? What is, other than pride, and Dan Campbell, I think, said, like, the line of, like, you know, you find out which guys really love football or whatever. Playing down the stretch here. Other than those sort of things, I don't know. Would you consider shutting guys down? Like, what are they? What's the goal here for the next 4 weeks?
Yeah, I saw that question yesterday. Somebody put it on Twitter, and it was the first time I really thought about it, was Sewell. And it, my initial reaction was like, well, good luck getting Sewell off the field. Okay, like, you're gonna have to get like a truck out there to drag the guy off the field. He's not going to want to leave the field. Okay, like, that's number one. He's going to want to play the whole season. I think that's how he's wired. And if you're telling him, I think what you tell him is, give us what you can. But obviously, if it's going to get to a point where, like, this is going to do damage, and it's going to be something where we think we have to do, you know, whatever, then yes, I would say that you need to then make the adult decision, probably, to limit if he needs rest, whatever, then that's that. But if it's something where, you know, it's just a thing that he's got to grind through, and he wants to grind through it, and it's not going to be anything that's overly severe, then I would say let him grind through it. Because, like, you can see how he plays, and, you know, he had a terrific game against Denver. I think PFF had him graded one of the highest tackles in the in football, right? I think overall.
I think the highest this week.
The highest in the week. Yeah. So you can see, and you saw after they got the win, right? Like, how important these games mean to him, how much all this means to him. Like, this is like foundation building time in some ways for Penei Sewell. Like, I don't want to just go all the way and be like, shut that guy down. I don't want him on the field. You know, like, I don't think if a guy is hurt, if a guy's like if Anzarike or somebody has got like a knee or something bothered, yes, shut him down. But if it's like a tweak here or there, and it's a guy like that that can still sort of give you something, and you, and like Campbell says, you really find out who's willing to stretch and grind here. Like, I kind of would want to see that right now, don't you think? Like, I would kind of want to, I wouldn't want to put anyone in risk of further injury, but I would want to see who's able to grind through a season, right? Like, I think that you can still learn things about guys right now. Am I wrong? What do you think on this? Because there's a pretty fine line with that. Sewell was pretty banged up at the end of that game. Yeah. But it's like, you know, like, but you admire how much it means to him. And if you're the Lions, you probably, like, want him on the field. You want him to keep growing, right? So, like, yeah, it's a tough call.
Yeah, I mean, he's been banged up for a few weeks now. He hurt that shoulder in Cleveland or Pittsburgh, one of those games after the bye, and has been dealing with it. And I think that's what happened. I don't know that the broadcast on Fox ever really touched on
Sewell. They never got injured. Back to it. Yeah,
right. Like, there was a moment there where I was worried he was, like, they had that fumble by the goal line, and he stayed down, and a couple of the other linemen were, like, doing the thing where you're kind of frantically waving for the trainers, and it's like, oh, God, this is terrible. This is bad, because it would look like that's what happened when Jacobs got hurt. Josh Wood was there, like, you got to get out here. Hurry up. It's like, oh, it's something. This is bad for Sewell. And then, you know, I think, like, I'm just guessing, and I tweeted it out, like, I think he tried to dive on that fumble and kind of got his shoulder, that bad shoulder, pinned underneath, and was just, like, really feeling it for a second. But at the end of the game, they ran that 2-minute drill for no reason with their starters on the field down by 28. And at the end of that play, he, like, took his helmet off, dropped it to the ground, crouched down, and just, like, sat there by himself while everyone else was, you know, doing their post-game handshakes, because he was just totally spent. And so I think
it's getting better.
His specific case, I think, you know, the motor's running there. He's always going. He's always, you know, that guy who's bringing energy. I think it is important for him. I think one of the things for him is, and a lot of these young guys really, is if you can play 17 games, let's go play 17 games.
Let's go play 17.
You've never played 17 before, and he didn't play last year. So let's push this, because we're going to need you when this is good. In theory, we're going to need you on January 10th or whatever.
I agree.
And so let's see. So I think that is part of it. I agree with you there. I don't know. I mean, I guess part of it is, who do you even shut down at this point? Like, who are you saving? I mean, like, if Anzalone's
exactly
ankle,
right.
If Anzalone's really hurting with that ankle, maybe he doesn't come back, but he's about to be a free agent and potentially, so I would think he'd want to get back. Like Swift, I wouldn't rush Swift back.
No, he's the one. I wouldn't.
That's
back.
It. And like Hawkinson, yeah. I wouldn't rush Hawkinson back.
Yeah, he's probably fine to sit too. Those would probably be the two. Swift for sure. Like, yeah, no, there's no way Swift's coming back. There's
no
reason
for
that.
Like, if Michael Brockers comes to you and is like, I don't want to play one game.
Yeah, that's fine.
You give him a day off. But
like, if Vitae would be another one. Like, if Vitae came and said, hey man, like, I'm banged up, I'd be like, okay man, you had a pretty good year. We can talk about some things, you know, but if like you can't give any more here and it's week 16 and you're done, okay. Like, that's one where I would say, like, I get that part. I don't think that would happen though, because he's had, you know, he's another one where he's had a year where maybe his money situation suddenly, you know, obviously you're not going to pay him big tackle money, but he's been a big help for Sewell and he's been a big help for the offensive line. And he's one where maybe you're looking at him differently now. And whatever that looks like. But if he were to be someone that came to you and said, you know, I'd want to shut it down. But even someone like Jonah Jackson, I'd be like, man, I'd like to see you finish the year if like all things are equal. And if you're not going to be in a situation where, you know, you're going to get hurt or whatever. But I'd like to see you put 17 games on your sheet here this year. You grinded through the whole thing with Sewell. You did it together. And then next year you come back. You know what I mean? Like, these are times when, like you said, those are important moments, I think, for players, not necessarily for teams, maybe for teams, but for Sewell to finish a game hurt on the road, to feel like what it's like, you know, you lost, whatever, but you put your work in and you finish the game. Like, I think that those are important for kids of that age, you know, as they're kind of coming up, and the Lions have a lot of them. So I understand that wanting to shut some guys down, but I wouldn't want to shut some guys down in some cases. I would want them to keep playing, you know, in most cases, I would think at this point.
Yeah, I would say maybe you could expand the rotations a little bit if you wanted to do, like, I don't know. But even that, like, I don't know that you're going to swap in Matt Nelson, although he's
I would also argue, like, I'd want to get Godwin and Reynolds more carries behind, you know, some of the good linemen too, right? Like, I'd like to see more of what they can do, right? Not to cut you off, but I'd like to see more, like, you can see maybe you see more from some of these guys in some of these spots, but you got to keep the best of what you have left out there around him. Otherwise, you know, is that look even worth it? I start to wonder.
So Goff, I kind of asked Goff this after the game and someone else asked him a similar question, but is there stuff other than just sort of these individual, you know, just measuring sticks, seeing how guys respond to these situations, seeing how they finish out the year. Do you think you can carry stuff over year to year? Like, the run game has been working pretty well. That was what I actually asked.
Yeah.
Like, the run game's been working pretty well. Does that hold up from this year into April when you come back? Or is there too much that changes over the next 4 months for any of this, anything you build momentum on now to still have meaning, you know, when it gets back to going again? And I don't know, because I think that's part of the hope, right? That you do some good things now, and then when you come back, you say, all right, well, we're in pretty good shape there. We don't have to worry about that.
Well, like we talked about it, and we're here now, it's December, like your hope at the beginning of the year, and, you know, in August, was that, and this was, of course, before Ragnow got hurt, and Decker, but your hope was that you had an offensive line and a run game that you could reasonably look at in December and say, by the time the season starts next year, if all things are, you know, relatively in the same spot, we will have a good run game and a good offensive line. And I think that if you look at them right now, and you put Ragnow in, and you put a healthy Swift in and a healthy Williams in, that on September 1st of next year, if they keep Decker and go through the whole thing, and everyone's healthy, that's going to be one of the top run games, I would think, in the league. That's going to be one of the top offensive line, you know, in terms of, like, personnel, right? I don't know about in terms of execution. We'll have to see what they do, but in terms of guys that you're like, whoa, they've got some guys. It's going to be there. I'm telling you, people are going to look at it different. It's not going to be like, well, the Lions have absolutely nothing. They're a complete trash heap. It'll be, they don't have a lot, but they have that, you know, like, and I think that we can reasonably say that. I do think we can say that. If all those guys are healthy, Sewell has been right there with Slater as one of the best, and Mac Jones as one of the best offensive rookies in the NFL, right? I think we can say that with full confidence at this point in the year. He's been terrific. How many games has it been now? 13, 14, whatever it's been.
Yeah, 13.
He's been a very good player all year long. A terrific rookie season for him with injuries, with adversity, all this other stuff. Jonah Jackson has had a terrific year, I think. Vitae's been better than we both thought he would be. We know Frank is good. We know Decker's good. We've seen the full Swift experience, what that can be like. We've seen what Jamal Williams can give them. So we've seen all these things. And if you go into next year with all these guys healthy, you have a real run game. I think you do. And that's why the quarterback stuff gets really intense as you look at that, because I think that you can start to hang your hat on a couple things. And I think if you flip it to the other side, if you keep grinding with some of these defensive tackles, you could go into next season, depending on what you do in the draft, and say, we really like our front seven. So I think that there are some things that you can go into momentum-wise. Not everything, not as much as you probably would have liked, right? But like, there's some things, I think. I would ask you the same. Like, are there areas on this team that you're looking at and saying, I'm going to look at that differently next year in May than I did last year, you know, when we went out there in May?
Yeah. I mean, I think you hit on the big one, which is, and I think we knew the run game had a chance to be good. Like that.
Yeah,
that was
the one where we were like, it has to be.
Right.
Think, right.
Yeah. They got the running backs. They've got some guys up front. If Sewell's what they think he can be, like, this is going to be a pretty decent run game. And I think that's all played out. And, you know, Craig Reynolds went in there, and if they hadn't gotten behind, I think would have rushed for 100 yards. And Igbubuke's, he had the fumble, but he's produced when he's been out there. You know, we haven't seen Jefferson a whole lot, but I think there's been, you know, he's had one or two runs.
If he can get off the COVID list, yeah.
Right. Yeah. So, yeah, he was one of those flu guys last week. I thought it was going to be one of his bigger games. They went with Reynolds. And certainly Reynolds probably deserved a shot. I mean, he was
He
was great in the preseason when they brought him in. Like, he had that story where, was it the Colts preseason game?
He showed up
like nobody'd ever met him until he got in the huddle. Right? Yeah. And then he had a great game and like made his won a job on the practice squad, and now he's been there. And they've been talking about him for four months now. Yeah. Like when he gets in there, he's going to do some stuff. And so I think we're going to see a lot of him down the stretch. But that's sort of the point, right? Like, they've been able to put guys in here that we know it can work with Swift, and we know to some degree it can work with Jamal Williams. But when you're putting Craig Reynolds in there and springing a 35-yard run on a decent defense, that's a good sign for you. And I think that that's the one for me that that run game is – I mean, I think it's got a chance to be pretty special moving forward. And I think, again, we knew that, but I wrote about it this week because I think, you know, yards per carry, they're top 10 in the league. But the big one that I looked at was yards before contact. They are fifth in the league right now, which tells
that's
you
the
that
money right there, man.
The
that's
line it. Is moving people and the scheme is working. Yep. And those things, regardless of who's in the backfield, should work. And that's why you hear a lot of teams. Like, obviously they have Swift, who's got a chance to be a premier player, but those are the things. If you have those things in place, those are the teams that just do what the Lions are doing and pick up random guys and throw them back. Then you're like, well, how the hell did that guy rush for 100 yards? And it's because the scheme works and the line's good. And I think that those things are in place. I guess we'll have to see about Vitae, whether he's around. And maybe I'll ask you that right now. Like, what do you think about him? Because I know he and Sewell have a good relationship. He's helped him a lot. He's played really well this year, but he's also, whatever his cap hit is next year, I got to look now, it's over $10 million.
It's a lot. Yeah, I mean, it needs to change, right? Like, I think that...
I guess it's $8.4 million next year. It's $10.4 this year.
Yeah,
so it's big still.
We talked about this a little bit yesterday, I think, or the day before maybe even, but like, and maybe even in the last couple of weeks. But, so I think that if you were... If you could find, he's getting tackle money, so you can't pay him tackle money. Obviously, he's been paid a fortune here the last 2 years. I don't know what the whole thing would be, but I think if you could go to him and be like, we want to redo something with you for 2 years, and we want you to be here and work with, you know, Panay and Frank and all the guys. And then you do that, you re-up him, you put him as a guard, and then you draft his replacement and you help him, you know, he helps develop that guy too. That to me feels like a win-win all the way around for everybody. I don't know if you make that work, but that's something where I would consider that, because to your point just a second ago about the line yards, like, that's the whole thing. Their offense, Swift really makes it sing, I think. If you had a quarterback that could move, it would sing, I think, because of all the things he can do in the pass game and everything else. But it, the Craig Reynolds
Goff
stuff.
Goff had a 13-yard rush.
He did.
He had a 13-yard run.
I'm trying not to make this into a Goff bashing session here. But the Craig Reynolds stuff is a great example for a lot of reasons. And he's a good back, and they like him because he's a disciplined runner between the tackles, and he's gonna find the yards that are blocked. And this line blocks, man. They create three or four, you know, line yards, as we call them, or whatever, every single time. Every single time. If you are a disciplined running back, you're going to get 2.5 a carry with this group. You're not going to be shedding guys, you know, the minute you touch the ball. You're going to have room. They can block all fronts, all schemes. They've done everything all year. They're out there moving people on Sunday with a third center. With a third center, like the guy, I don't even know who the guy is. He's off the street, and they're still moving bodies all over the place. Like, this has been a really good year for those guys who have really put their heads down, I think, fought through some adversity, fought through some BS. You know, we talked about the Decker stuff. Fraley, you know, I think has done a terrific job this year with those guys, all of them. They've done a really good job of just kind of, they're part of the team, but I think they work almost on their own. Offensive lines always do this, but they work on their own, and their own progress, I think, is something they can note, you know what I mean? Like, almost apart from the rest of the offense, if that makes any sense. So I really like where they're at there, long story short. And I would consider thinking about something with Vitae, not for the same price as he's at right now, but I would consider something there. And I would also consider still trying to get younger, maybe at guard, but man, you really got to like the four and a half maybe pieces that you have there right now.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to spend a ton of time on Vitae, but you know, he's sort of at that space now. He had a five-year $45 million contract. But all the guaranteed money on it was tied to the first 2 years. So basically, you're at the point now where
paid him like $16 million.
He would probably restructure it because he doesn't have any. I mean, they could cut him. And he wouldn't get another dime. So I think he's at the point now where you probably could get a restructure in there somewhere. He's getting paid like a top 10 guard in the league. And I don't think you need do that. Like you said, he's getting tackle money. He's getting like, like you don't need to be, like, he has to be making $10 million a year, $9 million a year. So, that'll be an interesting one to see because I think that has. We still, again, we've talked about this. They're going to go through the season without playing a single snap with their projected starting offensive line.
And
that was sort of how they were going to win games this year.
Holmes says this all the time, and Campbell does too. And just trying to get good football players, right? Like, Vitae is a good freaking dude who plays the game hard, who I think would qualify. And if he's on the roster and you can make it work, this is what we talked about with Patricia and Quinn. We saw so many guys that weren't perfect necessarily, but they were good. They were good football players, and you just let them go for, you know, because, you know, they grew their toenails too long or something or whatever it was. Like, so I'm not saying that that's the case in this situation, but as they go forward and as we watch them go forward, like, I think we're going to have to see, like, I wouldn't want to get into business of just letting good players walk off the roster, you know, like, or quality guys, you know, like. I think that's still important right now.
So you brought up Jacobs. I think that's obviously the fear right now, right? That you're going to that something like that happens in a game that essentially doesn't really matter. I mean, the Broncos, I guess, are still in the playoff race and it's on the schedule and like all that you're getting paid for it and you're playing for the number one pick and all this. But if the Lions won that game, other than the draft order, it wouldn't have done a whole lot to change the tenor of this season. And now, Jerry Jacobs was one of the bright spots, like one of the best stories of this season. Mm-hmm. And he flies in trying to make a tackle and, you know, gets rolled up on his knee and blows out his MCL or ACL and whatever else happened. I'm sure that wasn't the only damage done there. And now Campbell said 9 months, which puts you into September next year, which means he's probably missing the entire offseason program. He's maybe starting next year on you know, the PUP list or IR or something. So you're not going to have him. And that's on top of, we've kind of, I mean, I don't know when the last time we really talked about Jeff Okuda was, but that's on top of losing Jeff Okuda. And so now you're going into this offseason, and A.J. Parker has been banged up.
Yep.
I think Oruwariye is pretty clearly a guy that they like and want to keep around and think can help them. But you're at a spot where, I mean, Parker isn't – that doesn't look like it's a long-term thing.
No,
so that you don't worry about that one that much. But is he going to be your starting slot next
year?
Well,
right.
Is Okuda coming back?
Answer, right.
Like, what are you doing? That's a position now where – and safety, too. They really don't have anything other than liking Oruwariye and Parker. They don't have anything settled in the secondary for next year. So, I don't know. I guess that goes back to my initial question. Can you still learn anything there that you don't already know? Or
not in the secondary, I don't think.
Okay. So then how do you move forward there?
I mean, maybe you find a corner, right? Maybe I jumped too soon. Maybe if they, who knows, right? Maybe if they get a corner in here, they work a guy out and they like him or something crazy. I doubt it, but that seems like a stretch. And the thing with Jacobs is really hard because I think that you would be hard-pressed, and tell me if I'm wrong, you'd be hard-pressed, I think, to find another guy in the league that came out of nowhere to probably earn a job, probably multiple, probably for next year or two, like more than Jacobs did. I mean, he came literally out of nowhere. And it was like one day in camp, we're like, well, who the hell is this guy who just keeps making tackles, right, outside, and he just kept sort of... He played hard every day and every drill. Like, I think the first time they put pads on, he went out there and fought someone, which is like what Campbell was like joking about, right? Like, they loved him. Like, it was from minute one. They were like, you could hear people on like the first or second day of pads, like, well, Jacobs is probably going to make the team because like he's fought four veterans and doesn't give a shit. And he's one of these guys that they just like and he keeps getting better. And for him to get hurt this deep into the season and for it to be that long of an injury, man, that's really hard to see because I do think that. I don't know if Jerry Jacobs was going to be some like 7-year answer at corner, but I think that like a culture fit, a guy that was familiar with what they wanted to do, a guy that was playing at the effort level that you could say you have to play as hard as he's playing, like all those things, right? Like to not have him and have the juice probably that he's going to would give you in May and the offseason and the camp and stuff would be, that's a bummer because I think that as much as we talked about guys like that, keeping guys like that around in the summer for the practice purposes of helping guys get better, like that's – if you draft a receiver and bring him in here in the spring, I would want him to work out against Jerry Jacobs because I think he – you know, it's like I want to see if he's got the guts to do what's necessary. Like that's the kind of stuff that you're missing when you have 9 months without this guy. And I think that that's – it's really hard to see. And I think it's that's one that fans don't – probably notice or see all the things that go into something like that and why it probably impacts them as much as it did. Cause that's a hard loss to see. And that's why, a lot of people probably were like, oh God, like, should we get some more people off the field here? Right. But part of that is just football, you know, part of that's just how it goes.
Yeah. I mean, you're right about, I went back last night, just back through my notes from camp and OTAs and stuff. And I just to sort of save time, I usually write down player numbers and not their names as they're doing stuff. And it was like every page, 39
every
made a tackle, 39 broke up a play, like he dropped off a guy and made an interception every single day that we were out there. And you saw that continued progress. And so that is, I mean, it's a huge loss because he had played his way into a role, but also because he's exactly the type of guy that this team has to find. It's not all going to happen through the draft. You're not going to go out and make a bunch of trades that are going to turn this around overnight. Campbell said it from the first time I talked to him in April or whatever, March. Yeah. Like, we've got to have some undrafted guys. That's why we brought in this coaching staff we did.
He was
to develop these undrafted guys. And you did it. You get it. You got to – I mean, he's not an all-pro, but –
yeah.
As a rookie starter,
the example.
He held up pretty damn well, and now you lose him probably into next season. So, again, you're at Oruwariye. They got to get Melifonwu. I mean, he's on the COVID list now. He was hurt for 2 months. Like, you've got to get – so we talk about the end of the year. Like, that's a guy
I need to see some reps
from him. Like, two or three games at least. Just let's see what's there because as you start to write out this depth chart in pencil for next season – you're probably going to start the offseason with Oruwariye and Melifanwu as your starting outside corners and go from there. And you have no idea what you have in Melifanwu at the moment because he just hasn't been able to be on the field. So,
yeah.
I don't know. That's a tough spot. Yeah,
he's one that definitely you'd like him to get healthy and not only get in the mix, but like I would like him to just play a whole game. Right, like,
right. Yeah.
Remember what they did with Julian Okwara, I think, in like the second preseason game. Remember this? Like Campbell gave him like 87 yep. snaps, yeah. and he was just like, "We just wanted to see what he could do." Yeah. You know, this is what that's what I would like to see with some of those. He's the top one, probably. I can't think of another one off the top of my head that would be like I want to see.
No,
Barnes probably too, but like 90 snaps. Like, what are you gonna? I don't care if they're all bad. I want to see 90 live snaps that you can put on tape, right? Like, or whatever it is, a full game.
Yep.
I want to see you hang in there the whole way, like 100%. Like, get him off that COVID list or whatever it is and get him on the field because we did see some things from him earlier in the year where it did look like right before, and they've had so many guys that this exact situation happened to. It's been ridiculous. Right as it looked like Melifanwu was starting to get it, he was lost for the season, right, with an injury. And it was just Cephas, same thing. A.J. Parker, same thing. Like, so if he could get back out there and get, like, a stretch of time, I don't even care if it's against anybody good, but just, like, so you can get some film out there on him, that would be huge, I think, going into the offseason. Huge.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Well, what you bring up there is sort of, have you witnessed anything like what they're doing is happening to this roster?
I haven't.
This year?
No, but like I would ask you that because you've been covering the NFL longer than me. I haven't. This is weird.
I can't. I mean, you have teams that have, like the Ravens have gone through it this year too. Like you will have years where you just get really unlucky and you lose a bunch of guys. Like,
so yeah, right,
that's the
exactly.
team that pops into my head because I know like that's a really good football team that the Lions played, and now they're down like 10 starters because they keep getting hit with injury bugs. But you're right, like this has been, this has just happened over and over again. Cephas, you know, Romeo Okoro was playing great for like a game and a half, and then you lost him for the year. And
great football, too.
Ragnow, too. Yeah. I mean, Ragnow, I think, was. He might have had an all pro case this year, the way this run game's worked, and he played four games and then you lose him for the year. And yeah, Parker is now on IR.
They lost their best offensive and defensive player in the first 4 weeks of the season.
It's been wild. And like you said, the timing on it too has just been like Cephas was in the midst of his best game and he got hurt. Jacobs has been really playing well and he got Melifanwu came in and the first time he got hurt was hanging in there on a Monday night against Green Bay, and then he gave up a 45-yard pass and got hurt and was out for 2 months. Like, Jesus. It's just been... And I think it's really hard. I don't know. Is this...
Part of it... Like,
does it set back the rebuild at all for you that they can't where they're at with these guys?
Yes and no, I would say that. Because, like, Frank and Romeo are injuries that were, like, freak injuries that were, like... they're all freak injuries, but it was, like... you know, one of those things or two of those things that just kind of happen and you're like, well,
yeah,
maybe that's just one of those things that maybe you'd rather have it in a year like this than a good year where you were hoping that you'd make the playoffs. But then those things got compounded with a bunch of injuries from young guys that I almost wonder where it was like they were starting and playing guys before they were ready. And that was by design. And I did wonder, right, like if some of the injuries were happening because, you know, like A.J. Parker was a great example, I thought, all year where it was a guy that was smart. He's a smart player. Like he was only out there because he was a smart player. But like physically, he did not look like an NFL player. Like he was like smaller and a little slower, right? Like, and there were times where he'd get hit and you're like, Jesus, like he's getting knocked around, you know? Yeah. Like, so there were a couple of those that I think we've seen this year from good young players that just physically didn't have the chance to kind of get themselves where they needed to be, and they were on their way, and then they got hurt. And I think that's just part of football. But then, like, yeah, to combine that with all the freaky things, like Cephas getting hurt at the end of, like, a 45-yard catch or whatever it was. Like, what? Yeah. Lost for the season at the end of a great play, you know, like this kind of shit. Like, or Frank getting hurt, like, in the middle of a game with his foot, like step, whatever happened there. I remember that was a freaky weird thing too. Like that kind of Decker with his thumb, like getting ripped off or whatever it was.
Yeah, right. In this practice, stuff right before the season. Yeah.
You'd like to hope that for the Lions, for a team that's worked as hard as they have and played as hard as they have, like that the football gods or whatever, if there are any, would give them something on the back end here. Because yeah, they have had some pretty bad luck, and the only saving grace would be like, well, at least they weren't planning for a playoff push anyway, right? Like that wasn't like they thought they would be good. So, but yeah, I don't think it's stunted the rebuild though. It's just stunted maybe what you thought you were going to have in some guy. I mean, it stunted your project of like finding guys out of nowhere, you know, because any guy that it seemed like they might've found out of nowhere that you could maybe count on later immediately got hurt. Like those were the things that, yeah. But you know, the guys you've invested big money in, I don't think it's stunted much of that. Cause I think for the most part, we kind of still know, you know, where those guys are at. I guess Okuda would be the one notwithstanding there.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's made it a little more difficult. For me was the one, and we've talked about him. You and I have talked about Cephas a bunch. Cause I think that the way he was playing in the role he was in, it's sort of been mitigated now a little bit by having Josh Reynolds in there, because I think they've been using him as a number one guy, and he's got decent rapport with Goff. He's been playing all right. But losing Cephas, they didn't really have anything else to replace him with. And it's sort of just, I think that was part of why, you know, they lost Ragnow right in that stretch. Decker was out for a bit, so they were down a couple offensive linemen. But I think losing Cephas when they did was part of why the offense just went into the tank for a couple weeks, because they then had to change the entire passing game too. They didn't have anyone to play that role. And so that one hurt. I mean, Romeo Okora and Okuda, I mean, those Achilles injuries, you never really know with those. I mean, I would assume they come, like, especially Okora, I think
it was so early.
Come back and be fine, but I don't know. Is Okuda going to be even, we've talked about this a little, is he going to be able to play cornerback anymore in his career?
I don't know.
Is he going to be a 4-5-5 guy now after an Achilles injury and have to play safety? So I don't know. I mean, those are tough. I mean, it's just...
And it could be a good... I don't know. And, like, those are all 100%. And it's like... And the rehab... I guess that's the thing. It's like the rehab times could be something that, yes, it could stunt sort of the process here, because, like, if they can't... Because that's the greatest point about Okuda. It's like you want to get him back on the field to see where he's at physically, but also, like, if you do have to move him, you want to start on that process because he could be a good safety. He could. Like, it's not impossible that a guy like Jeff Okuda could transition, but you want to get going on that, you know? Like, you want to get moving, and you want to see, you don't want to wait another 3 months into the offseason for rehab for all these guys and everything else. And, like, that kind of is the fear, right? Where it's like you're going to get into OTAs and be like, okay, everyone's still hurt. Like, we got nothing here. This is a waste of time. Like, they can't afford wastes of time, you know? I think that's probably the long-term thing at the end of the day, but I can't think of a lot of all the rookies I think you're still hopeful about, right? Yeah. I think for the most part, you know, St. Brown is, he's there. He's there. And, you know, like, I think that you're still, knock on wood, hoping that all those guys are progressing the way you want. So that's fine. But, you know, yeah, it's, it's still touch and go. I think that our point from earlier in the year, like, this has to be a terrific offseason from Brad Holmes. They can't have any misses here. Like, and that includes what you do with Goff and the quarterbacks. And that's a conversation that we'll probably have louder as it comes closer. But it has to be a really good offseason here. They can't afford mistakes.
Well, that the quarterback spot is exactly one where if you had someone else there, like literally anyone else, you would say, all right, let's give him a game. I don't think they're going to do that with Tim Boyle.
No, they already did that.
Positive they're not going to do it with David Blau.
Right.
But that's the spot where if you had some random rookie in here, like, all right, well, let's see what he can do. And now you don't. So I still kind of question not bringing in someone else. Like, literally anyone. I mean, I guess you could elevate Steven Montez from the practice squad, but I don't think they're going to do that. So just as we're talking here, something that popped into my head. If you had to pick a defensive MVP for this team right here, this year, who would it be?
Walker? Yeah, probably Walker. Anzalone? It was probably Walker was the first one that came to my head, and then Anzalone.
I guess Walker's got five picks.
Walker has been better for longer. I think Anzalone has been, like, important.
Yeah.
Right? Like, he's been a very important, and Walker has too. But Walker, well, I think he's been good. I think he's been pretty consistently pretty good all year, or at least better for the most part. And I guess we'll see still. You know, it's still TBD what they're going to do with him, but I still think that that's a guy that I think there's a lot to like there. You know, I mean, you've surrounded him with nothing. He's got to play, you know, next to a rotating door of safeties. The corners have been changing constantly. I think he's given everything he can give. I just, you know, it's hard to get a look on some guys like that, but he's the one that stands out to me as probably the most consistent the whole way through. But Anzalone would probably be the most important, I guess, in terms of stabilizing some areas. But yeah, what do you think about Walker? What do you think is going to happen here with him long term? Because, I mean, it feels like they got another one. You can't let these guys go. These are good players, you know? Like, I don't know. I feel like that's a guy that's worth keeping for sure.
Yeah, and I know that this wasn't this regime, but you traded Slay, you traded Diggs. Like, this franchise has given away some guys who could be helping you in the secondary.
Jeez, could you imagine if they had Slay right now? Like, even on a discount?
Right. I mean, the tough part is even, like, looking at what safeties are making, he's not going to get, like, Harrison Smith, Justin Simmons money. He's not making $15, $16 million a year. But you go down that, like, Marcus Williams with the Saints – he got 10.6 or something. Logan Ryan and, you know, Jordan Poyer in Buffalo, Micah Hyde in Buffalo. Those are almost $10 million a year. Like, that's – it's going to be tough to get out of there without giving him
– yeah, he's going to have to get like
$9 million plus.
Yeah.
And he might want a lot more than that. He might want
– right.
You know, up in that $11, $12, $13 million range. I don't know that – I don't know if you can do that. Like, John Johnson was a guy who came – the Browns signed away from the Rams this past offseason. You know, everyone sort of thought, well, maybe that makes sense for the Lions. He was in L.A. And he got
a lot.
3 years and almost $34 million.
Yeah.
I don't think Tracy Walker is at that level yet.
No, I don't.
Of an impact guy. He hasn't forced a turnover. Like, he doesn't have a turnover this year.
No. I think that if you gave him like
still like nine,
yeah,
or ten?
Eight? I don't know. I think seven or eight, but like I agree with you that I don't think you're going to be able to get away with that. I think he's going to want more, and it's going to depend on what he wants, and it's going to depend on what he can get elsewhere, of course. And I don't think it's just it shouldn't be an
Diggs
automatic.
Diggs got six a year.
He should get more than he's going to want more than six. He's going to want more than six. So it's going to be tricky, I think, but. But it's also like, hey, it's also one where Walker is going to have to look at this reasonably too, I think. Don't you think? Like, I think it takes two to tango in some of these situations where it's like, what realistically, like you just said, I don't think anybody's giving Tracy Walker 10 or 11 a year. They're not going to give him John Johnson money. But I mean, I think that what he's done here is he's carved out a niche here. I think he's carved out some respect here. If they pay you a fair deal, what you're worth, and they want you here, and you can be part of a rebuild, should that be worth something to you? Or is it just going to be, I want $1 million more, and they're not going to give me $1 million, so I'm out of here. And if that's going to be what it is, then okay. But, like, I think that you're going to have to see sort of where he's at. And if he's like, I'm sick of this place, then I don't think I'd blame him for that either. He's been through a lot here. So I just, we'll see. We've talked about that all year where it's like, it almost felt like a no-brainer that you got to keep him. But now that it's closer and you're like, well, I guess it will depend on what he wants. And it's been that way with all these guys over the years. Like Galladay was the same conversation for a year and a half where it was like,
yeah,
you'd love to keep Kenny Galladay. He's a great young player. Like, but not for $20 million. Absolutely not. You know, like, so yeah, it's the same, you know, and not that Tracy Walker would ask for $20 million, but it's going to be whatever that, you know, range is. It's going to be the same conversation. Not for that much. You're not getting, you know, top five safety money. You're not a top five safety. I don't care if you think you are, you know, you're not. So like that conversation is going to have to happen. And I don't know where that's all going to go, but he certainly seems like somebody worth the time, you know, to see what you can do to make it work.
Yeah. I mean, I will say part of the Galladay conversation, it was sort of Galladay and Romeo Okwara at the same time, was that,
yeah,
you know, Brad Holmes got here and the cap was just,
it was a disaster,
shot,
yeah,
to hell, right? Like they didn't have a chance to do much. And so right, you were basically looking at that, like you can't possibly keep both. If you're lucky, you can keep one. And they prioritized Okwara, which I think
was a smart move. Yeah.
We can say was the right decision, even as Okwara got hurt this year.
Mm-hmm.
And so you look at next year and they should have a lot more wiggle room. I mean, I would assume somehow one way or another, Trey Flowers' contract is coming off the books to some degree. You know, we talked about Vitae. Maybe you're reworking that. They don't have a lot of huge contracts other than Goff.
Yeah.
Decker.
Goff.
Pretty big now. But Goff, yeah. I mean, Goff is a $31 million cap next year.
Of note.
Hockenson needs to get redone, or you need to pick up his fifth-year option. Like that's one that you're going to have to get a contract on there. Walker, too. Like, I guess Oral Warrior, maybe you need to give a contract at some point. I mean, there's some decisions to make, but
Swift.
I think maybe you can, most of the time, like I said, last year I think was sort of an extraordinary situation. But most of the time, when NFL teams need to find money for a guy that they really like, mm-hmm, they can find money for him. And so yeah, I think if Tracy Walker, if you need to structure it so Tracy Walker's averaging $11 million because he wants to be in that range, you can figure out a way to do that where the cap hit next year is like six.
Yeah.
And he's not actually making $44 million over 4 years. I think there's always ways to do this. And I agree. I mean, it would just be tough, as they talk about culture, especially to lose that guy, lose a guy like that out of the locker room, because I think he's been the one who's one of the guys who's really stepped up in that secondary. And so,
yeah. Yeah.
It'd be hard and you to know what? Let him walk.
It would be an important thing to note here that like your what you value, your culture in your locker room would have to be factored into what you're paying him. Because if you think that he's a top five safety in terms of like what he can do for you, you know, whistle to whistle is one thing. But if you think that he can give you something as a leader and whatever that's irreplaceable or not something that you're going to be easily replacing, then I think that's worth a lot for where they're at right now. Maybe more than in other years too, you know? So yeah, maybe there is something more to that. I don't know, but I definitely think it's worth the squeeze on him for sure. More than anybody. Hockenson's doesn't need to get done right away. I don't think, right? Like there's not a immediate.
No, I mean, they need to.
Well, yeah,
decide
right.
If they're going to pick up the fifth year option, which I would assume you would.
But the longer term process there doesn't have to happen right away. And the same would, you know, Swift's clock is not there yet or anybody else. So Walker would be the one. And or Amani would not be as prioritized for me as Walker, I wouldn't think, at this point. So yeah, he'd be the top guy. And it's like, it's interesting. Yeah, I think it's just a lot of things still up in the air about the cap for next year too. Like, and I still don't think we should close the book on Goff. I don't know what they're going to do with him. I, you know, like, I mean, all evidence has suggested that he's here still.
Right.
But I'm not going to rule out. I don't think we should rule it out. I don't. I mean, these guys, they say a lot of stuff. They talk to us a lot. They're pretty open a lot, but they're pretty careful a lot with what they say too, I think sometimes. So I wouldn't rule out everything yet. I'd keep a lot on the table if I were just guessing. I don't know.
Yeah.
Do you disagree with me that is it a lock 100%?
I don't think it's 100% lock. I think I'm closer to making it a lock than lot of people, and I'm definitely closer than a lot of people would like it to be. I think that's
probably fair. Yeah, I probably am too. I just I'm keeping hope alive that maybe there's something else on the horizon.
I don't know. I'm having a hard time seeing
it. I am too. I feel like he's going to be the guy, and maybe it'll be another guy that they come in and bring in a rookie, right? Like maybe they'll draft a guy, you know, like we've talked about. But yeah, I don't know. We'll see. But Campbell has said several times, hey, this is how we have to win, and next year might be the same. So, like, that, you know, maybe that's how it goes.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
So you're back out. You're back out at Ford Field this week.
Yeah. We got Lions Cardinals.
I don't know. Is there like.
I'm on the Cardinals beat Sunday, too, a little bit here. Well, Cardinals are a playoff team.
That's probably the way to go for this one.
This is a weird one because the Cardinals are so weird. And like, God damn it. They're so hard to defend because they do so many things that aren't translatable to any other team. So it's like, I don't even know what you're getting by like judging your team against these guys. But
I think your hope is that this is a tough one. They just lost the Monday nighter to the Rams. They're coming in here. There's going to be like 30,000 people at this game. I mean, I think you're just hoping that they sort of sleepwalk through it for a little while.
Yeah.
I mean, I will say we've seen most weeks that Aaron Glenn's been able to figure out something for a little while. The Eagles kind of crushed them with a quarterback who's not Kyler Murray, but gives you some similar problems to Kyler Murray. They have
the kind of smart play calling that like the 49ers had, where it was like they can hit you in so many different. Like,
I just
the discipline can't. Required here is going to be.
I can't
and the Ravens, you know, like
anyway.
The anyway. It's going to have to take. Remember the Ravens game where they played damn near perfect and they were still healthy.
Like, they were still healthy.
I think that is basically what you're needing here. Because, like, they were very good in that Baltimore game. Like, that's the game that I think I told myself, like, put that game in your head and just crystallize it. Whatever happens the rest of the year, don't forget that one as, like, their top potential. Like, they can do this. They did that. You know what I mean? But, like, they're so far from that right now in terms of, like, what they have that I just don't. I don't see it happening. But. Stranger Things, I guess. We'll see.
I can't.
Yeah, the Cardinals are nice.
I could see him hanging in for a half. I could see it looking like this Denver game did. But the bigger one's probably Houston. Houston and Jacksonville also played this week. So you kind of got one eye.
Yeah.
Either way, you're probably getting. I mean, I guess it's possible they could tie. Who knows? I don't even know if Urban Meyer's showing up this week.
Oh, my God. Would a tie be a good or a bad thing for the Lions in that scenario? The Texans Jags tie.
I think it would be bad because like on strength, the Lions' strength of schedule is higher than both of those teams, and so they would if they ended up tied. That's the first thing, so they would flip
because
the team that has the
percentages
easier strength of schedule moves up to a higher pick.
So you want one of them to get a loss.
You want somebody to lose that game. And one of the teams, it's the Jaguars, also play the Jets next week. So
So you probably want a Jags loss,
maybe,
right?
Maybe you want the Jags loss.
Well, hey, no problem there. Whatever. Because it looks like they're completely melting down. It actually you know what it looks like? It looks like Urban Meyer and Shad Khan are in a standoff to see who can fire who without having to pay someone a dime. That's what it looks like. I think we're 1 week away from Urban sitting on the field, like on the ground during a game in protest. Like that's, he looks like he's pouting and like not remembering who's playing. Like, come on. I feel like some of this is getting staged, but we'll see. That's all my Jaguars content for this week.
I have not seen an NFL head coach look less interested in being an NFL head coach.
Yeah, it looks like he's doing it. It looks like he's doing it on purpose. Looks like he's doing it on purpose. And I mean, Urban Meyer is Urban Meyer. I am not going to put that past him that he's doing that on purpose.
Right?
I'm just not. So like that he's doing this on purpose as some grand plan to try to get as much money out of this as possible and not get fired for cause. Because like that's probably what's on the table here.
Friggin' Daryl Bevel's just sitting there waiting for the interim tag.
Somebody did tweet at me that they were like, they felt bad for Marv and Agnew. And I was like, yeah, I did too, you know, like, because those are, you know, especially Marvin, he's a good guy. But then I was like, you know what? Marvin and Agnew got paid a lot of money, and so did Marvin. The Jaguars paid those guys a fortune, so I don't feel too bad for them. And I'm sure Bevel got paid a lot too, so they're probably doing okay.
Sure, yeah. I mean, it'd be fun to see.
Been through a lot, though, those guys. Jesus.
Yeah, especially, like you said, especially Marv. Like, for some of the reasons that we talk about with Stafford, like, it'd just be fun to see him on a contender again.
Yeah, Marv needs to get the hell out of there. Games. Yeah, like, right.
He's a guy who would absolutely show up and make some things happen in December if he were playing. I mean, he's still putting up numbers down there, and they're terrible. So
Agnew's young enough. He can find time.
Right.
Marv's getting to that point. Like, somebody's
31.
Somebody should trade for him. Like, some good team. He's got his money, right? The Jags paid him. So, like, he's going to. This will happen. Some good quarterback, probably Stafford, will get him on some kind of a. Yeah, they'll get him on a discount deal where some other team is paying all of his salary, and he'll go there and have like 95 catches 1 year, and they'll make a run. I'm sure.
Aaron Rodgers is going to ask for him this year. It's going to be the Lions' worst nightmare.
Marvin Jones is like the model of consistency in terms of receiver in the NFL, and a guy that, like, he's never going to get the huge money. But he's never going to be bad either. So, yeah, he needs to get out of there. Somebody needs to go save him, I would say.
That's fair. All right. Last thing I'll ask you, because I saw it. I'm going to spring one on you here. I see it going around on Twitter. Someone asked, what's the best press box meal you've ever gotten?
Oh, I did see that, journalist? Actually.
Do you have any thoughts on it? I can name my worst ones pretty quickly.
I can probably name my worst ones. The best one... And I don't even remember what it was. There were so many things at it. The Jerry World one is the best one in the NFL that I've seen. The spread, just every time I've seen it, it's been different food every time. They've had, like, roast beef and the carving station. Like, you would have, like, you remember what, like, before buffets went out of style forever? Yeah. Yep. Like, a high-dollar buffet? Like, that's what, like, a Vegas buffet. That's what the Jerry World one kind of felt like sometimes. And then in college... the Southern schools, the SEC schools, always had really good food.
Yeah,
Alabama always had good food. The couple times that I was there, all the barbecue down there was always like anywhere in Texas was always really good. But Penn State in the Big Ten has the worst press box by 100 miles. But
I was going to say that surprised me if you're going to say they were good.
But they have the best food. Food is outstanding. It's like a Thanksgiving meal almost every time or whatever. So. That's my rundown on that one, I would say. What do you got?
I'm not surprised to hear that about the Southern schools. I think the best, like, still to this day, the best meal of my life was, I was covering something at Georgia, and I drove somewhere with someone to, like, it was like a house. There was a grandma in the back cooking on, like, a stove and an oven. It's like, where are we? Is this even safe to be here? And it was the best meal I've ever had in my life. So I'm not surprised to hear that. Like I said, I could pretty easily rip off worse. Like everything at Soldier Field needs to be lit on fire forever. They still have the RC Cola deal there. That's the only place you can get RC Cola. The Lions gave us like Chinese food last year during the preseason, like in-house made.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that was pretty bad.
I threw that thing in the garbage. Jerry World's pretty impressive. I think that's also I'm trying to remember if it was Dallas or Houston where they roll out like
I've heard about Houston. Yeah.
I think Dallas, maybe it's both of them, roll out like the craft beers at the end of the game.
Dallas.
Dallas. Yeah. It always scores pretty high. Yeah. Not surprisingly, I guess LA was really good this year.
Rams. I bet Vegas is good too.
The Rams had a really good pregame spread, like chicken and waffles and stuff. Yeah. Like it was really good this year. Minnesota's consistently good with everything.
Yep. I would agree with that. I've been to that building. That's very good.
One more.
Atlanta is also good.
Been to Atlanta yet, or that new stadium yet.
So. I will tell you though, my favorite ever of any sport, period, and you have to pay for it, is Brooklyn, Barclays. They have last time I was there, it was several years ago now, but it was like a couple years after they opened it. My God, you had to pay like $20, but it was insane. I've had some good ones at the Garden too, but the Barclays pregame meal, it was like, and I think they had it every game. every game for like a while. And it was like, this is insane. And so I think it was like you were getting like a $70 meal basically for $20. It's pretty good. That was my all time favorite for any
Cowboys
sport.
Cowboys probably going to be up. The Bucks is always good too. They have one of the they have a really good carving station too.
Oh yeah, nice.
So that's that one always is a hit. I remember that one too because
Raymond James. Yeah, they do a pretty good job.
Two times we were down there. Like we had the one Lions had the one preseason game that got rain delayed. And so I just kept going back and getting more food. But they have the carving station, and then they also have like, what's the dessert? Like bananas Foster or something. Mm-hmm. Their signature. So that one's always up there. But anyway, all right, that's good enough.
Good stuff.
So like I said, we'll both be out there for Lions Cardinals this week. We'll be back next Tuesday, I guess, to wrap that one up.
Yeah,
look ahead to. Atlanta is the next. I'm forgetting.
Oh my God.
Playing the rest of the season.
Lions Falcons.
Atlanta the day after.
Day after Christmas.
Day after Christmas. So we'll wrap up the Arizona game and maybe we got the bowl games start Friday. So maybe we can get into some of those guys.
Oh, yeah. Maybe we get some bowl watch for some Lions draftables. There you go.
Carson Strong's coming to play in the 11 a.m.
We get a Lions bowl sheet out there for everyone. Draftables? Yeah, I like that.
So we can talk about that a little bit too next week as we get back in.
There we go.
So make sure head over to theathletic.com. If you don't have a subscription yet, you can find our show ad-free on the app. You can also get us at Spotify, Google, Apple, wherever you listen to podcasts. And thanks for listening, rating, reviewing, subscribe it. We appreciate all of it, and we'll talk to you soon.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.